Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Mutual Fund Advisor Fees, Post-Argument Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 2, 2009, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Jones v. Harris Associates. The issue in this case is whether a shareholder's claim that a mutual fund's investment advisor charged an excessive fee is cognizable under Section 36B of the Investment Holding Company Act of 1940, absent a showing that the advisor misled the fund's directors who approved the fee. To discuss the case, we have the director of the John L. Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware, Professor Charles M. Elson. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Elson.
I am going to be speaking today about the recent argument in the case of Jones v. Harris Associates, which is an extraordinary case, certainly from the business law perspective and the perspective of what traditionally the Supreme Court has looked at and not looked at. The case itself involves a dispute over the fees paid to an investment advisor to a mutual fund, the argument being that the fees were excessive. And the case itself made its way to the Supreme Court through the Seventh Circuit. And it's extraordinary not only because of the subject matter of the case, which involves compensation, but also of the battle, if you will, between two ideological allies, one Judge Richard Posner and one Judge Frank Easterbrook. The dispute they have in the case is in and of itself fascinating and certainly merits a Supreme Court review. Let me set the stage, and then we can talk a bit about the case and the dispute. The case involves a fee paid to a mutual fund that was administered by a Harris Associates, and the claim was that the management fee, was excessive, which is interesting because typically, over the years, courts have not involved themselves in disputes over executive compensation. Back in the 1930s, the Supreme Court spoke about compensation in a case called Rogers v. Hill, where they ruled that compensation that was unrelated to services rendered was a waste of corporate assets and actionable by shareholders. And that really set the law for judicial review of compensation for many years to come. In other words, courts have the power to reduce payments to executives. The question is, do they exercise that power? And the answer till now has been no, they have not. They instead allow the board directors of the companies involved to set pay, board that is in fact disciplined by the marketplace. And in this particular case involving not the payment of executive compensation, but a fee, which is similar to executive compensation, it was a management fee to the manager of a mutual fund. And the question was, from the plaintiff's perspective, was the fee excessive? And the plaintiff viewed, in fact, that it was, and sought relief from the court from, among other things, this excessive fee. And again, the question is, what should the court do about it? The question for the Supreme Court is not do they have the power to reduce fees, because they do under earlier precedent, but the question is, will they, in fact, exercise that power? And that is really what is at the heart of this case. And at the heart of the dissent and majority opinion, this epic battle, if you would, between two very towering intellects and towering intellectual allies. Judge Easterbrook, in the lower court opinion, states that, in fact, the court should not get involved in this issue. Compensation to those who run mutual funds is effectively regulated by the marketplace. If you don't like the fee that's being charged, you simply move your money somewhere else into the market. Or competition between mutual fund complexes ensures that the fees paid to the advisor are, in fact, fair and reasonable and acceptable. And his view is that litigation to challenge such fees is really inappropriate in that the market itself polices it. And that is what we would consider the typical classic law and economics approach to compensation disputes. And frankly, dovetails neatly with what courts have done with these disputes over the years. They haven't focused on the compensation, but rather they've focused instead on the processes by which the compensation was created, not the compensation itself. And they've tended to stay out of issues involving excessive compensation. in a startling turn, Judge Posner disagrees with his colleague and says, actually, this is an area, compensation, that is not subject to market regulation. In fact, in his dissent, alludes to problems in the public company area because of captured boards of directors, that is, boards that are dominated by managers and passive, an ill-functioning marketplace vis-a-vis compensation, that the market is an ineffective restrainer of compensation, and that there needs to be third-party involvement, if you will, some sort of judicial review. And that is what is before the Supreme Court. Now, it's interesting, too, that this case comes to the court because it's the first compensation case, the real compensation case, the court has looked at in many, many years with the eye to considering whether or not they should get involved in compensation disputes or not. And it's an extraordinary case, not only because of this sort of battle between titans, but also extraordinary given the popular and political attention to the compensation issue that has dominated the national debate the last couple of months, which is probably why it became a controversy in the Seventh Circuit and why, obviously, it's a controversy that the Supreme Court itself has taken up. Compensation is a political issue. The Supreme Court sometimes is influenced by politics of everyday disputes, and obviously this is one dispute that they seem to want to weigh in on. What remains to be seen, obviously, is how, in fact, they will weigh in on it. Will they, in fact, buy the classic argument and stay out of these disputes, although recognizing that they have the authority to enter these disputes and make judgments on effective compensation, but instead that they will continue to follow the market approach and stay out and let the marketplace determine compensation, or taking their cue from other branches of the government, a la the Treasury Department and its use of the special master to oversee compensation in the TARP banks, will they jump in and say, actually, because the market has failed here, this is an area that we wish to regulate, if you will. And I think from the questions and that came up in oral argument, it's going to be very interesting to see which way they come out. I am not a handicapper of either lower court cases and certainly not Supreme Court cases, so I have no idea what they'll do with this. But the fact that they took it and considered it, I think, has something to do with the hot political nature of this issue. And number two, this battle of titans, if you will, between two brilliant ideological forces on the Seventh Circuit. And with that, I will conclude, and come decision time, I think we'll be as interested as this audience and, in fact, what they happen to do or not do in this particular case. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.